on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
This is the beauty around the wisdom of the natural world, because there is a day and there is a night, which causes the whole 24 hours. There is the summertime and there is a wintertime, which causes the full cycle of the seasonal year. There is always a yin and a yang. There is always this organic aspect of light, dark. Being able to release the idea that light means good and dark means bad is the first step to shadow work. And when you begin to do it and you start realizing my daylight also has a shadow and it's called night. My summer also has a winter and it is a part of me. So in short, to answer why would you want to do shadow work, which I could go on for hours, but one of them is because it's part of you that is hidden. And if you're curious about it, it probably is time for you to investigate so that you can find more totality of self.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, in humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth.
I'm your host, Nick Mather, and in this episode, I am joined by esteemed medicine woman and author, Granddaughter Crow, to discuss her latest book, Shamanism in Your Shadow. Granddaughter Crow provides an in-depth explanation of shadow work, relating personal experiences to emphasize its importance for psychological and spiritual health. She discusses the power of shamanism, how animal allies can assist in shadow work, and how aligning with natural cycles can enhance personal development. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. Granddaughter Crow is a medicine woman, public speaker, teacher, intuitive reader, and author of The Journey of the Soul, Wisdom for the Natural World, and Belief, Being, and Beyond. Descended from a long line of spiritual leaders, she is an empath, medium, and member of the Navajo Nation. She was voted Woman of the Year in 2015 by the National Association of Professional Women. She joins me today to discuss her latest book, Shamanism in Your Shadow. Granddaughter Crow, welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Oh, thank you, Nick. Thank you so much for having me. I just really enjoy the content that you bring forward to the community, and to be a part of that is just an honor.
Well, thank you. You've been on my radar for a while. I know that we are in the same neighborhood, as it were. We're both in Denver. And I have a copy. I haven't read it yet. I have a copy of Belief, Being, and Beyond. But I have read your latest, Shamanism in Your Shadow. So I'm really excited to be able to connect with you. I thought that maybe a good place to begin is sort of elementary in a way, is the question of, well, what is the shadow? And what is shadow work? And I don't like to assume that people watching this know. I kind of thought that they did, but then I had someone contact me once and they're like, I have no idea what that is. So I thought it would be a good place to begin. So what is the shadow and what is shadow work?
I love it. I absolutely love it. So that's a wonderful question. I take a look at the first half of my book, really delves into what is the shadow, Carl Jung, as he coined the shadow self and all of that. And so if somebody does pick up my book and they want to read it, they'll give a lot of explanation through that. But I would have to say shadow is something that probably has a negative connotation in a lot of circles, because they deem dark shadow with bad or evil. And, you know, but I literally say that shadow means the part of the self that's hidden. And when I talk about doing shadow work, it really is in line with psychology. Like you don't have to be a spiritualist or an occultist or anything like that to do shadow work. It's very psychology. You're looking at the hidden aspects of self. And so when I say the hidden aspects of self, I think that the deeper question becomes, Why was it hidden? The assumption is that it was hidden because it's bad, or it was hidden because it was wrong or evil, not up to snuff, bad. But in truth, the more that I investigate personally shadow work and my shadow work and work with people who do shadow work, it changes the question, and it's like, why did I hide? Maybe I didn't hide an aspect of myself because it was bad, but maybe it was perceived as bad in the community that I grew up in. So there's a lot of, like, oh, here's a great example of that. For the older people in your audience, there used to be a time when it was considered evil to be a left-handed writer. Like, if you wrote with your right hand, you are sound, normal, acceptable. But if you wrote with your left hand, there's something wrong with you. And then, like, if you were in Catholic school, the nuns would come across with the ruler on your hand, switch it, and all of that. And so, for those people who may have lived through that, the left-handed writer self is hidden in their shadow. And so I like to kind of keep it very open so that when we approach our shadow, we don't only find the hidden aspects, but we also find hidden gifts that maybe society wasn't ready for at the time.
I like that. And I like that you bring up that there's a gift in it. It was pointed out to me when I first learned about this. Mythically speaking, sometimes, there are shadow figures, and a common shadow figure is like the dragon, and the dragon is often sitting on hoards of gold. And so there's this hidden wealth there if we can just access it.
I love that. Yeah, I absolutely love that. And it also kind of makes me think too, as far as, going into the hidden aspects, some of what is hidden is our innate gifts of being able to ask questions, our gifts as far as maybe you have, a psychic gift, or you have dream interpretation, or just plain old curiosity. Sometimes those things are hidden as well because the society or culture that we were raised in doesn't want us to be curious and doesn't want us to explore our authenticity and or our gifts. And so, yeah, there's a lot of gifts in the shadow.
And so the question I was going to ask next, excuse me, and I think that we're actually already answering this, is why engage in shadow work? But at the same time, I think that we still have yet to say exactly what shadow work is. How do you work with the shadow?
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. So, how does one work with the shadow? I'm sure that there are a number of modalities. You could probably Google, get a psychologist, ask them to do shadow work with you. If they have a modality, they would be able to do that. You can work with it in different ways. So, to be able to explain how to work with it, it's going to be different depending on the modality. But what I would say is it is the ability to sit with hidden aspects of yourself with a non-judgment and curiosity to be able to allow those aspects of yourself to explain what they are, express themselves. And a lot of times in working with shadow, one of the things is, okay, so one of my first experiences that come to my mind is the aspect of me that is mean, right? I can be awful sometimes. And so I'm like, oh, but I'm like, I don't want to be mean. I really do enjoy being nice. So I kind of put my mean side in my shadow work. And then when I started working with my shadow, she came up to me, the mean aspect, the raw person. And I said, "Oh, you're so mean. I don't like you. You're that bad person inside of me." And due to it was more of a shamanistic journey, some would see it as a meditation or maybe a vision. I had a one-on-one experience with her, and she said, "Why are you being so mean to me?" I said, "What?" She goes, "You're the one who's being mean to me." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And she said, "I am the aspect of you that keeps the bad men away. I am the one that came out when you were 17 years old and you are walking alone in that alley. You needed to be mean, horrible." And I'm paraphrasing because I don't know if I could cuss on your channel, but the B word, right? The B word. And I was just like, whoa. So she was my protector. And then I had a conversation with her, and she said, "If you keep hiding me and not embracing me, then I'll still be a part of you, but you will have no say of when and where I come out. And I may come out at the wrong person at the wrong time because you're trying to hide me." So it was this moment of embracing an aspect of myself that I saw to be negative and be able to understand why that aspect of me was behaving in a what I would perceive negative way, actually come to terms to understand that she was one of my greatest protectors, probably saved my life. If you want to know the story, it is in the book Shamanism in Your Shadow. And then moving into then a conversation where she said, "You know, you're not in a scary place anymore. You don't have to be as defensive. You're with good people. You have good people around you." And so I will sit back. But the moment that my shadow self sees that I am in a harmful situation, such as at night, vulnerable female walking through an alley, vulnerable situation. Oh yeah, you better know my shadow is going to come out, and she ain't going to be nice, but that's what she is going to protect me. So in a very interesting way, that was like an example of what shadow work looked like. But really, it is being able to sit, put yourself into a conscious state that is safe enough and comfortable enough to be able to pull some subconscious or unconscious aspects of self to the forefront and have what I would say a dialogue with them, understand why they behave the way that they do, understand where they come from, and then ultimately integrate them into self. Now, why would one person want to do that? Well, this is the beauty around the wisdom of the natural world, because there is a day and there is a night, which causes the whole 24 hours. There is the summertime and there is a winter time, which causes the full cycle of the seasonal year. There is always a yin and a yang. There is always this organic aspect of light, dark. Being able to release the idea that light means good and dark means bad is the first step to shadow work. And when you begin to do it and you start realizing my daylight also has a shadow and it's called night, my summer also has a winter and it is a part of me. So, in short, to answer why would you want to do shadow work, which I could go on for hours, but one of them is because it's part of you that is hidden. And if you're curious about it, it probably is time for you to investigate so that you can find more totality of self. And I believe even Carl Jung was talking about that there is a powerful creation force within shadow. So, yeah, does that answer better?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's the idea that not just balance, but to be whole, to be healthy. And I like the idea that, the shadow is often seen as what we reject, but that rejected aspect of ourselves serves a very valuable function. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. It does. It shapes who and what we are. It shapes our individuality. And it's basically, I took a photography class one time. And so I went out with my camera trying to get some really cool pictures, right? And I noticed that if you take pictures in the twilight, either the morning or the evening, it gives the picture so much more dimension because the shadow is there.
And the shadow is a property of light because it's the light itself that creates the shadow. And I find it interesting, and what I find so important with shadow work is I hear a lot of people talk about being light workers. And there's value in that, I suppose, but it seems like you don't want to ignore that darkness either, because if you just focus on the light, that shadow, like you had said before, it's not going to go away. It's always going to be there.
Yeah, it's actually, and I get what you're saying, and good on them for the light workers, but I hope that they also become a shadow worker too, because, and this is a very interesting point. If you, in my observation, if I deny my shadow, oh, it's still there. And it's gonna come out sideways. It's gonna come out in situations that it does not belong because it's a part of myself that wants to be expressed. Life loves to express itself. And so those who deny shadow, it's still there and it's still gonna come out. And it's kind of like, but then you're like, oh, I didn't know that aspect of me. But in doing shadow work, and it's kind of funny because a lot of light workers will send people to Granddaughter Crow to do shadow work because I'm Granddaughter Crow and I'm not afraid of the dark. In fact, I find us so much beauty in it and so many gifts and so much deep understanding and so much trauma resolution and so much healing when you go in there and do that work. And so I highly recommend anybody to do shadow work. However, I highly, highly recommend for any spiritualist or conscious person to do shadow work because when you go into consciousness and you begin to grow and gain in magic and magical working and the occult, you begin to come into this understanding that thoughts are things. I am a conscious being. These are my tools. This is a conscious being. And you start working more and you start gaining and growing, and your voice becomes more powerful and your being becomes more powerful. And so, in that state, what if you were like really, really powerful and then you didn't do shadow work? And then all of a sudden, as a wonderful light worker magician, you say, give us justice and equilibrium. Uh-oh, do you know what you just did? You just opened up equilibrium into your life as well, into your magicianship as well. And if your magicianship is out of balance because you didn't do the shadow work, then you're going to have to do the shadow work. What I'm suggesting is, if you are going to be conscious and powerful, you need to be very, very observant. It's your responsibility to be very observant of your totality as it appears today. We keep unfolding, but yeah, it's a responsibility for spiritual people to do their work and to do their shadow work. Plus, it's amazing and magical and wonderful. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that comes to mind, though, is since the shadow is that part of ourselves that's hidden, it makes it incredibly difficult to see it because precisely because it's hidden. And so shadow work, if I understand correctly, is the attempt to bring that hidden aspect to consciousness. So am I on the right path there in regards to shadow work?
Absolutely, absolutely, to bring those hidden parts into your consciousness or the subconscious or unconscious self into the conscious self.
So how do you do that? I know that you have in the book, you offer some series of, I don't know what I want to, ceremonies? Would it be fair to call them that? Exercises? I kind of like ceremony. I think they seem more ceremonial to me.
Yeah, I love that. So I will tell you how I was able to do that. Shamanism and your shadow comes from the position of shamanism.
Yeah, let's talk about that. What is shamanism?
Okay, yeah, let's talk about that. And then you circle us back around. Shamanism is actually an ancient position, understanding, lifestyle, consciousness that is global all around the world. And the term shamanism, I believe, came from like the Tungustic people, which is kind of like in Russia and such. And then it kind of changed, and I go through the etymology in my book. But it kind of turned out to be this blanket term that people understand as the individual who is able to work with the wisdom of the natural world, as well as go into different realms, journey work, in order to constitute balance within our human existence. For the most part, that would be a very general term. Some people can do that, through like maybe it's more European shamanism. So now we're looking at the Norse, and Odin was known to be shaman. Maybe you could look at it from another point of view where you're in Australia or Asia. There's all different types of people who hold wisdom and act as an intermediary between the human race and the unseen world, and/or the natural world and unseen world, to journey in order to cause balance, as well as understand they also, for the majority, have worldview. Shamans hold a worldview of animism, which means that everything has a consciousness. So now I am literally not just working, I'm not using a tool, I'm working with a tool because the tool has consciousness in and of itself. And so I think that that's probably, there's one more point that I want to share with your listeners, because you have very intelligent listeners, and I want to give them, equip them. There is also a term, traditional shamanism, which is more explaining an individual who is indigenous to a certain part of the world or the globe, and then is raised traditionally through their, indigenous culture. Then there's also what people would now say neo-shaman, which is anybody, who Googles and meditates enough can become, a neo-shaman. And I love shamanism. I am shaman. And so the beauty around working with shamanism as an approach towards shadow work is the understanding that you're working with the natural world. And you said it really well, Nick, is that isn't the shadow a part of the light? It's anything that the light touches will have a shadow. And when we conceptualize that or understand that as, academic, we're like, yeah, if I have good and then I have bad. It's like, no, let's just get out of our heads and let's get back into our bodies. Take a step outside. If the sun hits you, you have a shadow. And it's not bad. The tree has a shadow. The plant has a shadow. The bird has a shadow. Everything that light touches has a shadow, which means that it's organic, which means that it's natural. And so when we approach it from that point of view, that shadow is organic and natural, then it takes away all of these negative man-made connotations around don't do it, it's going to get you into trouble, and it's more exploratory. And then moving into the shadow work. So from that point, do you have any questions about shamanism or want to add anything about what
No.
shamanism is?
Yeah, no, that was all really good. The only thing that I guess there would be two things that I would add, perhaps. One is my understanding. I like the definition that the religious studies scholar Mircea Eliade came up with, where he referred to the shamans as masters of ecstasy, in the sense that they are masters of achieving altered states of consciousness. And I think that's really important, especially with the shadow work as we've been talking about it, is that you are, in a sense, putting yourself into an altered state of consciousness, either, through, there are a variety of techniques, mostly through like drumming and rattling, and we'll get to that. And so I think that's crucial. The other thing that I would add is maybe a third category outside of the traditional shamanism and the neo-shamanism. And that would be, and this is maybe part of neo-shamanism, but the core shamanism. Yeah, that was Michael Harner, I think, who had studied, I forget which communities he studied with, but he tried to get it to its core essence so that they're kind of avoided aspects of cultural appropriation, I think.
Absolutely. And I love that you brought up the altered state of consciousness because that's exactly it.
Yeah.
To the degree of, like you said, drumming, rattling, psychedelics. My Aunt Alice, full blood Navajo, she was a high priestess of the Peyote Way down on the Navajo reservation. And so that type of work and working is very much there. When we talk about altered states, that's almost a muscle that people need to work with. I work with altered states and have for so long that I can be in a couple of different states simultaneously and not lose my place. But that doesn't really help when I'm going grocery shopping. I have to and just so
Yeah.
it's no, but the beauty around going into those altered states allows the mind and consciousness individually to grow and then interface with the unseen consciousness that is outside of the self and then interact. And as a shaman, I would say I don't manipulate. When I am in altered states, I dialogue. I come in with a lot of respect. So we could talk about the upper worlds and the lower worlds, and I have a book about that. But it really is this beauty of being able to go into an altered state for the purpose, with full intention, of meeting an aspect of your shadow. And in that, you are making an agreement. And I am all about agreements, seen and unseen, the interface between the conscious and the divine as it reveals itself to you and the collective and all of that. But it is this agreement. We keep making agreements. So in that moment, if you make an agreement, I am going to enter this altered state of consciousness in order to meet an aspect of my shadow. I know without a shadow of the doubt that you will, because the consciousness hears you, your shadow heard you, and so it will be. So I love that altered state. And I also like the core shamanism as well. But yeah, working in an altered state in order to get there, I think that's whether you go into hypnosis or whether you eat an edible or whether you drum or rattle or just breathe and meditate. Yeah, the altered state.
Yeah, and it can just be also like imagination. I think that's what Carl Jung did, is it was called active imagination, where he would kind of go deep into a sort of altered state and have these conversations with the beings that he met.
I love that because, a lot of times people will ask me, well, how do I know that it's not my imagination? I did this journey work, I did this guided meditation, I went under hypnosis. How do I know, Granddaughter Crow, that that wasn't just my imagination? And what I say to them, Nick, because I don't have a better answer, is I say, did you turn over your imagination with intention to a higher power? Well, then who was driving your imagination? And in such, you did journey work because it wasn't just you making all this stuff up.
Right.
It was you in dialogue. And I love that active, I talk with a lot of beings also, and some of those beings that we talk with inside of ourselves are our shadow.
Yeah, for sure. And the shadow can be the shadow figures, I'll say that, that we can encounter. And, we encounter them in dreams as well. They don't have to just be human, they can be animal as well, correct?
Absolutely, which is another wonderful segue. Shamanism and your shadow, from the position of the natural world doing shadow work in the altered states, these rituals that you were talking about, these ceremonies, these I basically have in the part two of the book, one chapter dedicated to four different animals, one chapter each, one chapter to the raven, one chapter to the snake, one chapter to the owl, and one chapter to the wolf. Now, why? Well, because then now you have an ally when you are going to do your shadow work. And so basically within these chapters, it looks like, you go into this guided meditation. It's kind of like a portal, and you breathe and you go through this guided meditation that we've written down, and then you go into journal prompts where you can say, I saw this, it said this, I felt that, da 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 da. I have a lot of journal prompts for people to do that internal work. And then I do a lot of explanation about different things that you might find, whether you're working with the raven or the snake or the owl or the wolf. I mean, it was divinely written. I think the animals came in and kind of wrote it through me because I speak English. And so it was one of those beautiful things where then they can look at what they wrote and then come through. So in these guided meditations, it's more of a portal, a gateway, a doorway to go here. I am going to lead your consciousness here, and I'm going to introduce you to a raven. And this is the landscape. You go ahead and talk to the raven because it is here that you will recognize your shadow. And then the snake, do the same thing. When you work with a snake, it is here where you will literally start going, oh, I'm understanding you more. I'm realizing you more. And each of the animals takes you into more of a deeper understanding of where your shadow came from till the end when all of a sudden you're in love with your shadow as much as I'm in love with mine.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I wanted to talk about the animals a little bit. And there's something I want to kind of try to get us to, but one of the reasons that all the animals that you listed resonate with me very much. And, I love ravens. I had down in Chaco Canyon, I had a really interesting experience, and there are ravens there. And snake, I used to be one of those people that hated snakes. I couldn't stand them, And I did this practice when I lived in California. I referred to it as my spiritual practice. Every Friday I hiked, and I hiked the same trail every week. And I did that because I wanted to get to learn the place, to learn the landscape. And I originally chose the trail I went on because there were supposedly few rattlesnakes, because the first trail I tried, there were just rattlesnakes everywhere. And I'm like, no. And it ended up where I kind of developed a relationship with rattlesnake. And I found it really interesting. And I had a roommate for a short while who told me that the rattlesnake was my spirit animal. And she didn't mean that in a good way, I don't think. But I learned lessons. And I think that there were like shadow lessons. You know, what can you learn from these animals? And not just in our, you know, in an altered state of consciousness, but in reality, what can they tell us about who we are and our shadow aspects? Because, you know, snakes, you know, one of the things that I learned is they're very considerate. You know, they're not like just waiting there to bite you. They will let you know that they're there. They will give you the warning, and they're only going to act in self-preservation, right? And so it was sort of like learning to respect something that was seen as dangerous.
Yeah, I love that. And you hit a lot of beautiful points because, in a very interesting way, you going on that hike and connecting and having that interface with a snake in order to grow your consciousness, going into the hidden aspects of your fear, that was shadow work right there. Like, that is how natural and organic it is. And then you took it to the next level of, well, what do you do with this? You apply it to your natural, your lived experience. You recognize that just because something or someone or a concept is frightening to you doesn't mean that it's sitting there trying to bite you. It might actually just be doing its own thing.
And I liked the observation you made in the book with snake, and especially the venomous snakes, is that sometimes the venom is part of the cure.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. The venom is part of the cure. It's kind of like there's so many different ways. I guess if anybody just wants to sit with that and say the venom is part of the cure, you would understand it in so many ways. What I'll say is, like, sometimes approaching shadow work feels like medicine or venom. And you're just like, but, or like Granddaughter Crow, I don't want to be seen as mean. You know, I don't like that. But when I sat with it and I understood and I took in why did that anger happen, then all of a sudden I realized it was there to protect me. And the venom is definitely always, I mean, it's the same reason as why in the yin and yang, you have a little yin in the yang and a little yang in the yin. It's that balance and equilibrium around it. But yeah, there's the venom is absolutely part of the medicine. It's why they give us vaccinations so that you will grow tolerance towards. And so sometimes it's okay to be in situations that might feel a little scary or whatnot. You might be just getting a vaccination to build up your own immune system towards whatever it is, you know, that you're fighting. Or that your system needs to be built up.
Well, and the roommate I had that said that the rattlesnake was my spirit animal, I could actually see how that played out because it was a horrible situation. And I was like shaking my rattle, you know, like, you know, beware, I have my limits. And I reached my limit and it's like, okay, you need to find an elsewhere to be.
Love it.
She brought the snake out. But yeah, I was hiking last year here in Colorado, and I remember crossing paths with some other hikers, and they're like, oh, be careful, there was a rattlesnake down there. And I got all excited. I'm like, really? I'm gonna go see the rattlesnake.
I love it.
That's who I've become now.
I love it.
There's something else I don't know, and please forgive me if I stumble a little bit here in trying to express this, but there seemed to be a underlying current within your book that maybe wasn't explicitly expressed, but I think it's there. And I don't know if this is part of shadow work or not. So I kind of want to ask you, and here's what I'm talking about. So we've got like the directions, north, south, east, and west. We've got the elements, you know, air, fire, water, and earth. Then the times of the day, and then the seasons. And it seemed to me that part of the larger project of what you're doing, because you begin in the east, which would correspond with the morning, and end up, you know, at nighttime. That part of what is going on here is putting ourselves into alignment or into sync, maybe, with the natural order of the days and the seasons.
100%. 100%. You get a gold star and extra credit for that, Dr. Nick. You picked that up right. The reason why I did that, and you can read this book 10 times and not catch it. So if you listen to this podcast, you get a little nugget. The reason why I did that is because it helps an individual to embody the concepts of spirit, emotion, mental when you're working with the shadow. It brings it here in your physical body where it actually is able to manifest. So if I keep giving familiarity and familiar patterns, your body will relax and understand and start filling in its own story. And I'm just giving clues. So my body knows what it feels like in the morning. My body knows what it feels like when I'm facing east. My body knows what it feels like at noon. My body knows it's different in the evening. My body knows the difference when it's at nighttime. So when I just say, you know, you're in the east or you're in the morning, if you allow your body to go, what does it feel like to be in the morning? It will give us each our own unique sensations around that. But the morning is the time when you wake up. And when you wake up, that is the time when you are able to start to realize or consider. So it's not just waking up the body, it's also waking up the consciousness of the shadow. And then by noontime, so it takes you around the medicine wheel and ends, it's a circle, it's a cycle, but it is familiar to everybody's body, irregardless of whether you were born 200 years ago on the other side of the planet or not. You know what these things feel like, and you know, and so when you work with them, then all of a sudden, and I get to hear feedback, some people are like, and then there was just something about when I got to this one, I didn't know which direction we'd be going, but I felt like it was calling me north. And I'm like, that's because it connected with that natural. We were in the east, south, west. The north is the one that's done. So it's almost like they get this synchronistic magic alignment tool with the whole process of working with it that becomes alive within their own sensation and then enhances the magical understanding of their shadow and to connect. It's a real fascinating, it's fascinating to write. It's really fascinating to hear feedback when I'm talking with somebody who is just like, I don't know what it was with that one chapter, but I knew we were going to be at nighttime and I knew that this is what we were going to do. It's because I showed you a pattern that your body and ancestors have recognized, a familiarity, which then will give you empowerment and the ability to digest your own shadow organically without like having to overcomplicate it within your mind because your body gets it. So yeah, I did that on purpose.
Yeah. Well, I thought you had, but but it wasn't explicit, you know.
Right.
It was there, yeah. But I also liked it because it connects us to our physicality. It connects us to the world that we live in, you know, to the seasons and to the cycles of the day. And I think that we are so often divorced from that because of the culture that we've created. And when we put ourselves into sync with that, we're putting ourselves into sync with something I think that's pretty powerful. And I don't know exactly what that is, other than, you know, the I don't know, the I don't know what to call it.
I don't know what to call it either. Yeah. I don't know what to call it either. And it can be, it's probably known by so many different names. If you are a ceremonial magician, you might say, well, you're working with the four directions and the elements are creating everything and they're mastering everything. Or if you look at the tarot, you're looking at the magician who has those four elements that creates everything. But it is basically like the essence of all of the little things that you need to practice any and all crafts.
Yeah.
Whether it's even if you're just doing, well, I'm not a spiritualist, I'm not an occultist, I'm not a ceremonial magician, but I did read, you know, how to manifest, and they said that I need to put my thoughts behind it. Oh, well, there's air. And then I need to put an emotion behind it. Oh, there's water. And then I need to do an action. Oh, well, there's fire. And then I just need to see it come manifest. Well, there's earth. So in all different forms. So I guess we could just call it the tools of the magician.
Yeah,
I'm good
okay.
at that. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, it's also the Tao that is what came to mind, you know, the way, put ourselves in the way. Yeah. And excuse me, I've known about the cycles of the seasons and the moons and whatnot, and for a long time, but I do want to give a shout out to a friend of mine, Stormy Lantis, who runs a retreat, Gaian Rhythm, and all the retreats are based on the holidays and the seasons. And I saw something similar, and what you were just talking about is, you know, one way to work with all of these, and I think this still applies to the shadow, is, you know, winter is where, you know, it's all kind of dead, but there's stuff happening underneath, right? But we want to like rest and let things kind of sit and stew for a little bit. And then in the spring is when they start coming up and we can start working with them. And you kind of go through those natural cycles with our projects and the things that we do in our everyday lives.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's exactly it. I do think that, you know, this, there's a whole conversation around how we have divorced ourselves away from the rhythms of the natural world. And I am a person, I wrote a book called Wisdom of the Natural World. So you know where I stand on that. You know, I'm all about go out there, be in the natural world, understand the natural world. But I think that a lot of times the reasoning behind that, it's not just for fresh air and for health and mental health and well-being and deeper understanding and spiritual growth, all of the above.
Yeah.
It actually begins for yourself to understand and hear yourself. There is a very Odinic, what is it called? Odin says, I talk to myself unto myself.
Mm.
Or like you said, Carl Jung is like, I'm talking to my dream states. It's about the talk to self.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't take time to do that, you start projecting your own personal conversations onto other people, like, you know, but when you get to come back to self and talk to self, you can do that. You can find that rhythm so much quicker in the natural world because your ancestors lived in the natural world. Your blood lived in the natural world. It's something that is so deeply ingrained beyond the program of societal norms at this point. It is something that is so deep inside of us. And when we begin to find that, then we also begin to talk with the shadow, which is a part of that self. So absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. The natural world seems to be shadow for a lot of people in the sense that we create this division between culture and nature, and we forget that we are nature, that we're always in nature all the time.
Yes. I say that all the time, and you're the first person that got to say it before I did. So, yes, and yes. We forget that we are nature. We forget that we are the natural world. We forget that we are resilient. We forget the beautiful lessons of the tree in the backyard may like stand tall. And then all of a sudden it grew all of these lovely leaves. And then it has to let him go. Do we take him into trauma therapy? No, he just lets go of the leaves because it's natural. There's so many different lessons within the natural world. Here's another one that the human race is the only organism on the face of this earth that has concepts such as I am not good enough. I am too tall. I am too this. I don't like my shadow. If you look at a tree and you go up to a tree and you're like, hey, tree, don't you think you're a little tall? Aren't you rubbing your height in the face of the rose bushes? You know, they're gonna be jealous. And then you go over to the rose bushes and you're like, you know, those thorns are kind of sharp, don't you think? And the rose bush says, I am a rose bush. And the tree says, I am a tree. And your shadow says, I am a shadow. It is organic. And it helps us to relieve these ideas of, I have to be you have to be me. It introduces, I get to be myself. And that is what Creator created me to be, you know?
We're really hard on ourselves, with our insecurities and everything, and all those insecurities are a shadow. I'm not good enough and not smart enough and all these other things. Wanted to ask about the medicine wheel, because that's and we've kind of been talking about it a little bit, but I was wondering if you could say a little bit more about the medicine wheel and working with the medicine wheel in the context of working with the shadow.
Yeah, I love that you ask that. So, the medicine wheel, for those who are unfamiliar, it is once again something that many different cultures throughout all time have created a circle and stood in the middle of it, right? And so now we know these, if we work with that circle, we know this to be a medicine wheel. I even consider Stonehenge to be a medicine wheel of sorts. But when I'm working with the medicine wheel that I'm laying down in the book, I literally, it is a circle and it is divided into four different pieces. One is the north, south, east, and west. You've got the four directions. You've got the four seasons. You've got the four times of day to include midnight. You have an animal on each of them. Why is this significant? Because in our society, a lot of times we think linear. We think as a line. Even our, you know, we think in terms of a straight line, and we think that everything has a beginning, a middle, and an end, which is true. There are many things that do, but one of the wisdoms that we can find within the natural world is that everything rolls through seasons. Everything rolls through cycles. It is a never-ending cycle. It is cyclical. And when you start looking at the circle from a magical point of view and applying it to your life, then you begin to go, oh, I understand that I'm going through a really dark time right now, but I also know that the sun is going to come up tomorrow. And you start thinking differently. There is no points or hierarchy. It is all equilibrium. I think there's books that teach about circles, literally. And so the beauty around the medicine wheel is that it outlines a circle, which then is kind of like it encompasses the circle, encompasses the work of the shadow worker, the reader, to be able to come back to and not lose their way. They have, it's almost like creating the magician's table, and this is where we're going to be doing our work. And you get this sacred space that you continue to revisit to do your shadow work. And then when you finish your shadow work, if you've ever sat in the middle of a beautiful circle, you then have equilibrium and balance, and you know what it feels like to go around it and walk around it, or a labyrinth or whatnot. Your body once again understands, which can give your emotions and mind that wisdom of this is what equilibrium feels like.
Yeah. The thing that you said that I came up, and this is what I just noted down. Shadow work equals medicine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Time.
Yeah. And it seems to me that, and this isn't anything that you really address in the book, but I think that maybe this is also implied, is, we want to engage in the shadow work to make ourselves better, to make ourselves whole and healthy and balanced. But I know Jung also talks about collective shadows
Yeah.
and that we need to engage in this not just for ourselves, but to make the world a better place, because we have that tendency to project the shadow outward onto other people. And we're just not conscious that we're doing that.
Yeah.
And when we do that, we're not dealing with an actual human being. We're dealing with a figment from our own unconscious.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. In fact, when you don't do shadow work, you project even more, and then become afraid of, well, it's those people, or whatever. But I love that, the collective and the shadow. So I noticed that under 2020, when the world locked down and shelter in place was a thing and social distancing was a thing, what I noticed happening was people lost their distractions. They could no longer just go to the movies and go to a restaurant and just go to the club or go to the mall, whatever it is. They lost their distraction and they had to kind of be by themselves a little bit more and be very consciously aware. And in that, just that alone, I noticed a lot of people would like even come to me and they started doing inner work. Because the external, distractions are gone, and they started doing inner work. And then I started writing the shadow book, and now the shadow book is here. And I literally had somebody say, "Oh, 2020, 20, oh, 2025 United States, we need to do collective shadow work. Thank you for writing this book." So, not to get political or anything like that, but it is this idea. So, how do we f affect? Like, how do I sit here and affect that? Well, one, I could write a book and get on your show and talk about it and hope that I spread it that way. But really, the truth is that for every individual that takes their consciousness and expands it, the organically, it's picked up by their circle. And their circle is like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And it starts spreading like that. And I literally have book clubs that are like, oh, we're gonna do this in the fall. Oh, we're gonna do this in my book club. They're gonna do the shadow work collectively to walk with people through it. And I think that's wonderful. But I also, the final thing that I want to say about that is, I can't write a book that I don't live. And so, in order to write this book, I have been doing a lot of shadow work. And it has actually caused me to be kinder to myself and kinder to my fellow person. And it also is a lot easier for me to see people's shadows without judging them and going, oh, they've got that gift that they're hiding. That's okay. We'll let them unpack that. So it's this beauty of when a light in a room gets lit, it starts growing with other candles, and before you know it, it can light the whole world on fire in a good way, where we can be empowered and enlightened.
And that may be, we've been talking a little bit over an hour. That may be a good place to end on. A nice, hopeful place. But let me ask you the final two questions. What are you working on next? And then where can people go to find out more about you and your work?
Oh, absolutely. So right now I am working on my next book. The title is still not totally solidified, but I am working on something that I think that in the title there is going to be a Navajo word, and it is called Hojon. Hojon, which is Hozho, Hoshon. And it's like you said, the Tao. It is a way. It is like Zen. It is a way of being, and it is a being in balance within harmony. And so that's probably going to end out in the title. But this book is about recognizing our internal narrative and understanding maybe where it came from. Maybe it came from your childhood. And hearing it well enough where you get to now decide whether it's still your authentic internal narrative that is supporting your life moving forward, or do you want to change it and be empowered and change it to be living an empowered, beautiful, kind life on purpose, kind to yourself. And so it's about that. And that should be coming out in 2026. Otherwise, granddaughtercrow.com. You will see, I have my own podcast. It's named after Belief, Being, and Beyond, which is one of my books. And it literally is about that we all, the way that we believe constitutes how we behave in the world, but there's always something more. It really kind of explores other people's belief systems. I do one-on-one sessions. I actually do luncheons. Right now you see me as Granddaughter Crow, but I can change to Dr. Joy Gray, corporate person who brings leadership wisdom from the natural world into different workplaces. So I've got that going on too. And so yeah, just granddaughtercrow.com if this is interesting. But I think more important, if there's anything that people would take away from this, it's that I've done my own shadow work and I will continue to do so. And I don't recommend it because it just made me a better person. I recommend it because it helped me to understand who I am and fall in love with what that is.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, it's it, and I think that's the point of shadow work is that it never ends. It's a ongoing journey. The shadow is always there. It's always with us, and it's an ally. It's an amazing ally. So, Granddaughter Crow, this has been an absolute delight. Hopefully, we'll be able to speak again, maybe when the next book comes out. So, I thank you so much for your time and this conversation.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
And that's a wrap on episode 196 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you're part of my YouTube audience. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, please hit that like button. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to subscribe to the channel and click that notification bell. You can also follow Rebel Spirit Radio on whatever audio platform you use for listening to podcasts. Right now, I'm nearing 20,000 downloads on the audio platforms, yet I only have 12 followers, and one of those is me. It only takes a second to like, follow, or subscribe, and it's totally free, and it really does help. Putting together this podcast is a labor of love, and I do love it. I put a lot of effort and time into each episode, so if you find value in the conversations I provide here, I hope you can find it in your heart to send a little love my way. With more subscriptions and followers, I could possibly get some sponsorship, and honestly, having some funds come my way to help with equipment, hosting, and other necessary subscriptions would be really helpful. You can also help by joining my Patreon at patreon.com/rebelspirit. The link is in the episode description. You can also buy a super thanks on YouTube to help support my work. As I always like to say, I'm here in the Front Range now doing missionary work in regards to religion, spirituality, and ecology.
consciousness, the esoteric, and how all of this can help us heal humanity's sacred relationship with the living earth. So if you feel moved by the rebel spirit, and you know I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me in my efforts to share the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to, or watching, Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be in peace, may you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.